Welcome to Small Bites Radio with Donato Marino and Derek Tim. We hope you're hungry.
Raw spaghetti you can eat with a spoon. Oh, SpaghettiOs.
Hit it.
Where's the beef?
Cookie.
He likes it.
Nothing for you. Nothing for you. Nothing for you.
Feed me more.
Long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans, babe.
Welcome, everybody, to Wildfire Radio, Small Bites. My name is Donato Marino with D&L Coffee Service, being the barista, and welcome to the show. Derek, take it away.
Oh, man, what a show we have lined up tonight, Don. Unfortunately, the Eagles couldn't pull one out.
I know. That was so many drop balls, and it was... I didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about happy things.
That's right.
And the things that sort of make me happy and the happiest the most... It's when we get to talk to my favorite person, one of my favorite people on the show. I can't say my favorite, one of my favorite.
Can I take a guess?
Take a guess.
John? I don't remember his last name.
Oh.
No, Bosco, I'm sorry.
Don't feel bad,
Don. John.
It only took
I was only
me,
joking.
It only took me 3 years to pronounce it correctly. Isn't that right, John?
Part, didn't I? Yeah.
That is correct.
So what's happened? What's hot and heavy this week, buddy?
All right, let's take a look at what's happening. Let's talk about Umi Seafood and Sushi Bar, which had its opening in the last couple of weeks. They're bringing sushi back to the Reading Terminal Market. According to Philly Mag, Umi was brought into being by Young Kim and Susie Kim, both of whom already run seafood-themed restaurants in the city. So that's Umi Seafood and Sushi Bar, now open at the Reading Terminal Market. Of course, we all know about Fashion District Philadelphia and Market East, which had its big opening recently. And the new mall has a number of food options. The one that's most talked about is City Winery. Which includes obviously a winery as well as multiple bars, a restaurant, and areas of live music. So it sounds like definitely a place to check out at the new mall in Market East. We mentioned something back about Queen and Rook. Well, they recently had its opening in Queen Village. Queen and Rook is a vegetarian menu in nature, and the place is stocked with over 1,000 board games to play while you eat. We also have 9th Street Bottle Shop. It's going to be a new wine and beer place from the DeBruno Brothers, which will be opening sometime in October. According to Eater Philly, the location is more of a pop-up shop for now, but we'll be adding more food options next year, become more of a more permanent store and sit-down restaurant. On the Jersey side of things, this week is Dine Out for Hunger, and there are a number of South Jersey restaurants that are participating. If you check out Food Bank of South Jersey website for the list of restaurants in Burlington, Camden, and Gloucester counties that are participating, they're donating a portion of their proceeds for the food bank. That's all this week from the 22nd until the 28th. So these articles and more from the past week in Philly Food will be posted later tonight on my blog and shared on Twitter at EatingNestJersey. And as always, hashtag SmallBitesRadio.
And also on a sadder note of news, was confirmed Carl Ruiz did pass away, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was completely shocking, came out of the blue, and he will definitely be missed. He was a pleasure to follow on social media. He put fun back into food loving and did his own thing, and it was great, so we're definitely going to miss him.
Much too young, 44 years old, and on a happier note, I want to say congratulations to you, John. I did hear wonderful things about your book signing down Cape May. Even some books were sold, was reported back, and why don't you just give a quick 2 second, what is the name of the book in case anybody wants to have the book sent to them at home?
Sure, absolutely. It's A Culinary History of Cape May. You can find it on Amazon.com and in bookstores in the area in Cape May, also around the Delaware Valley. It's a history of Cape May told through food, and it gets interest and people talk about it. People love Cape May, love talking about the book, and that's been great.
Perfect. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking to you. We really appreciate it. Have a good night, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.
Good night, John.
All right, Don. Well, we have certainly been spoiled in studio tonight with a wonderful, wonderful treat. And do you know how this treat came upon us?
I know it was brought by a courier.
Many couriers.
Yes. And it had to arrive kosher.
Correct.
So that has to be...
But there was
feet by itself.
But there was a certain way that it's perfectly pronounced. And we have the people in studio to talk about that. We have, first we'll say who made the wonderful cake, Executive Chef Shannon Johnson. We also have Christine Wally of the Marketing Director for Lionsgate Community, and the people who are going to give us the correct pronunciation of what's going on in that community is Jerry and Judy Franklin. They have moved into one of the apartments at Lionsgate. And what did you guys have done? What's the correct pronunciation of what happened there?
It's Takasha a Kitchen.
Beautiful. I'm glad that I was able to coach you of how to pronounce it perfectly before the show started. You hit it beautifully. Well, good job. So you've moved into Lionsgate apartment. Was it this wonderful apple cake that you had? And you said, I have to move there no matter what.
Well, we did come for a dinner. And we sat at a table with six people. One man just turned 100.
Wow. Ooh.
And he was one of the livelier people at the table. And we had great food. That was before Shannon was the executive chef, but it's improved since she took over.
Good job, Shannon.
And we really were sold on the place. But I have to tell you, we didn't have to kosher our kitchen because all the kitchen appliances were brand new.
And that's sort of a problem in the New Jersey region, at least, because this is the only 100% kosher facility like it in New Jersey. So if you were bouncing around, having dinner, dining and wining with your friends, wondering where you're going to retire, Lionsgate was where it was at because it's the only 100% kosher facility, correct?
Yes, and we invite our friends here for dinner. It's a cheap way out and there's no tip.
And how about you, Judy? What sold you on moving there?
Perhaps it's the people.
The people.
Besides that it's kosher. I mean, we wouldn't have come otherwise because there's nothing else that's kosher in. We were living in Pennsylvania. There's nothing in Pennsylvania. And this is the only place in New Jersey. So we're very grateful. But it's the community that's so warm and so giving that we've made so many friends.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And for anyone who doesn't know, what exactly is kosher?
Well, it involves a number of things. Most of the food is the same and you wouldn't know. That is, you can make anything kosher, but it shouldn't have no. For the meat, you can't have hog. In the Bible, it says the animal has to have chew its cud and not have cloven feet. So cows are good, but pigs and camels are not. And it's hard to question what it says in the Bible. That is just exactly why it says it. Some people says because pigs are dirty, but it's not at all that. If it's in the Bible, that's the rule. So
it has to do with dairy as well.
Yes,
correct?
Yes. And also, you can't mix what's called meat. Meat is called fleischig. It comes from Yiddish, which is related to German, so it's called fleischig. And milk is called milchig. And you can't have them at the same table. So through our lives, we've had two sets of dishes, one fleischig, one milchig. And then when Passover comes, you need two more sets for what's Pesedik and what's not. Pesach means you can't have any bread or leaven. So it's hard to make cakes on Pesach. It requires hours of beating eggs. And I'm sure Shannon knows how to do that.
So, Shannon, what was it that drew you to this facility as an executive chef that sort of limits some abilities to work in a certain way because you don't want to cross-contaminate? And that may be difficult for some chefs. But for you, you've obviously excelled at it. You mastered it. And the cake that you brought is wonderful. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the cake and then tell us what the advantages of working at somewhere like Lionsgate is.
So the cake is pretty much a bunch of resident recipes that I got, and I kind of just took the best of everyone's, and I kind of made my own out of it. I have to scale it to feed a 300 people, so this is, you know, scaled down to just one cake, but it's different. Cooking kosher is, you know, I don't see it as anything different, but, you know, you're just really substituting.
More things. Aware.
Yeah, definitely more aware.
Now, do you have a Jewish background yourself?
So I did work at another Jewish facility in Cherry Hill. It was, you know, it was many years ago, but.
But as far as yourself, personally?
Oh, no.
Okay. So as far as working in Jewish facilities, has there been any recipes that you were unaware of that you were like, wow, this is wonderful? Because that's what I really like talking about two different chefs, that when they start working in different culinary regions, say you're working down south, it's a similar concept of working in a different cultural area of working Jewish, kosher. And it could be something that you've never eaten before, and you're like, this is some good. This is the best matzo ball soup I ever had.
Oh, my goodness. Matzo ball soup. I have it every Friday.
Big matzo balls, but they're light.
Yes. It's delicious.
What's your favorite thing that Chef Shannon brings out?
Oh, that's difficult to say, but because I'm a chocoholic. But if you rule out chocolate, I think it might be what's up in my apartment right now. It's beef stroganoff with noodles.
Hmm, look at that.
I personally made that one today.
That's his favorite as well. So, I mean, it sounds as though you guys are really living well. You're eating well. You're enjoying time and company with friends and family. But maybe you, Christine, maybe you could describe to people about Lion's Gate. It's located in Voorhees, and it's a little bit different than some of the I guess, well, how would you phrase it, Don? An older age phase
plus
of your life?
55.
55 and older.
That's the only thing I can think of.
But we're going to give it a different name. I don't want to give numbers because nobody wants to give numbers. I mean, because obviously Judy doesn't look a day over 21. Why do we have to say that over 20, over 55?
I guess when you're ready to retire and you know you're ready to retire, This is what you want to look for.
I mean, I would definitely look at Lionsgate as a continuing care facility.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also it's considered a life plan community. What
is
that?
It's right. Independent living.
So what is a life plan community?
So Shannon's right. Formerly, the community has always been known as a CCRC, Continuing Care Retirement Community. And then just about a couple of years ago, there were some folks that thought, you know, maybe that's a little too stark. Let's warm this up a little bit.
Long-winded.
And that too, right? So I think what we thought of is my life, my plan, my community. So it's called a life plan community. And basically that means that, yes, Judy is right, there is independent living, which is great. We have apartments and cottages, but then we have opportunities to transition as our healthcare needs transition, as our lifestyles change. So we also have assisted living, we have rehab, and we have skilled nursing. So basically, when you move into life, Lionsgate, you have no worries after that.
You have everything.
You have everything, and the things that you're concerned about, I've got this big house, and how am I going to take care of this house, and who's going to pay my bills, and things like that. It's really just taken out of your worry bubble because you've got everything taken care of. Our amenities and the resort lifestyle just allows you to live your life and enjoy your life to the fullest and build those relationships, as Judy mentioned.
So what would be the advantage and the benefit of moving to Lionsgate?
So we call it the four H's, right? We call it healthcare, hospitality, housing, and holistic wellness. So housing address.
You should give it one more H. Another happiness. H,
happiness. Yeah, you're right. The five H's. I'll change that on Monday. So we talk about housing. So I said we have apartments with all different kinds of styles and sizes. We talk about and our cottages, which is more of an independent, they're standalone housing. We have hospitality. So we have a concierge that's taking care of, you know, scheduling your appointments for you. We have transportation to the store, to the market, to the theater, so you don't even have to worry about driving. We have no maintenance or upkeep. you don't have to change another light bulb if you don't want to. And with the dining, we have a
that,
four.
That could be a joke, couldn't it, Don? Sure. How many people did it take to change a light bulb?
At Lionsgate, none.
None. Zero.
If you live there, none. And we also have a dining. So we have a formal dining room and we have a bistro. So the kosher dining is not just, you know, excluded to dinner. So as we did a video recently and a woman said, if I don't ever want to cook again, I don't have to. And that's pretty amazing.
Nice.
That's pretty amazing.
And we have housekeeping also. That's
right.
Given to us.
That's right.
Oh, man.
Housekeeping, security.
So if I gave you a fake ID and said I was 55, would you allow me to move in? This sounds like someplace I definitely need to check out.
I'm seriously thinking about it. maybe a future residency, reservation for a future date or something like that.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
I should say that you don't have to. I'm not retired. I'm emeritus at Temple, but I'm still working on physics because with computers and everything, I've worked at home for a long time. So I'm still more active than I ever was, and I have a book coming out and papers coming out, and it's a wonderful place to go if you're not committed to a 9-to-5 job at any age.
And that's a perfect...
So you are welcome.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a perfect example, Jerry, that people are living a lot longer, more active than ever, possibly not even retiring, still staying in the workforce, and you guys have a lot different expectations now what is offered and where you're going to live and what amenities you want. So what are the amenities at Lionsgate?
Well, you can come home from work and jump in the indoor swimming pool.
Nice. That's right. That's a plus. That's right.
Indoor pool.
I don't know if they would want to see me. In-
I definitely don't want to see me.
There is a jacuzzi, too.
We have something called Lionsgate University, which is really amazing. It's almost like a university without walls. So they have very active participation in classes every day throughout the week, everything from Renaissance art to current events to art history. And what else, Judy? What did you say you were going to attend a class? We have performances. We have concerts and performances.
Entertainment.
Music appreciation by a really brilliant musician who sometimes plays himself. He had played for the Philadelphia Orchestra.
That's amazing. And also, you guys are really having the sense of community and making sure that it's going right because you are affiliated with the Jewish Federation of Southern New Jersey.
That's right. We started, we opened in 2007, and basically what we were doing was answering a call and a need by the Southern New Jersey Jewish community for an outstanding retirement community with a Jewish tradition. And so our affiliation with the Jewish Federation of South Jersey is very, it's very important to us, and it provides a wonderful foundation. And so we're very pleased to be able to offer this to our community.
How large of a facility is it? What's the total number of residents?
So we have 164 apartments in independent living. We have 13 or 11 cottages. We have 57 residences in assisted living. We have 78 skilled nursing beds, and we have 32 rehab beds. So it's fairly large. You don't have to be part of the Lionsgate community to be in rehab or in skilled nursing. But when you do join our community, you get preference and first priority for all of those services. You get to access them. So God forbid, maybe you fell and broke a hip in your apartment. You could go to our rehab, and it's all under one roof.
Nice.
So that's phenomenal. So is our wellness center. We have geriatricians who act as primary care providers, and I come from a history where geriatricians are highly regarded. They're specialists in the care of seniors, just like we would never send our kids to anyone but a pediatrician, right? We wouldn't bring them to our general practitioner. Nope. It's important that seniors are being seen by geriatricians, so we have those on staff as well. So you can, again, stay right under the same roof and go see your doctor for wellness checkups, for your immunizations, things like that as well.
That's great. Now, also, Chef Shannon, that's a lot of people that you're feeding and making sure that they're nourished. And many possibly have dietary restrictions or nutrients that they're looking for. How do you keep up with that? That has to be a busy day.
It is a busy day. I don't see my desk until probably the end of the day. But I work very closely with our dietitian to make sure that the meals are nutritious, especially for, you know, the elderly. I make sure that, you know, I'm giving them every component of their meal. It's a four-course meal at the end of the day. So, I mean, it's a pretty large meal that
that is very large.
That we're serving.
Especially for a facility, because normally it's usually two. It's a plate. This is the special of the day, and here's some pudding for dessert. So is there a set time? Is there room service for certain individuals? How does that sort of work?
So the meals are available for pickup or delivery, but we also do, they're independent. So we have, seating from 4:30 to 6:30, and pretty much they can come down anytime between those times and be set and have their four courses and enjoy our fine dining room.
What's your favorite meal to make?
I love brisket and kasha varnisks.
Well, who doesn't love a good brisket?
Yeah, thank you.
Can I say apparently your blintzes are amazing.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
I've heard people rave about that. There was a woman who I invited somewhere and she said, I can't miss. I'd love to come, but it's blintz night and I can't leave. I can't miss that.
So what would you guys, Judy and Jerry, say? What is the night of the week, the month, the quarter you guys don't miss out on? Because obviously it sounds like there's a lot of entertainment. There's a lot of things to do. Is there Trivial Pursuit or Twister? You make sure that everybody's there for Twister night?
On a personal level, Friday night is the night we have to be there because we don't travel on the Sabbath, which is Friday night and Saturday.
And there are
services.
Yes.
Friday night and Saturday morning, and the meal is extremely delicious.
So you look forward to every Friday night for everybody to be there for Sabbath, have a wonderful meal, good conversation, and you guys are ready to hunker down and have some fun.
I don't know about the fun.
But of course,
the other nights are the fun nights.
But of course, the Sabbath is more than a meal. I mean, it's a feeling, and there's a very warm feeling at Lionsgate. You don't have to participate in this or that. You can just be yourself, and there's so many lovely people who have a lovely feeling about them and smile, and we don't have to talk about what's going on in the world. We can just say, how are you today?
Yeah.
Tomorrow, five or six people are going to ask us, where were you last night? You weren't at dinner.
And you should just say, I was kidnapped and made my way back.
But I should mention, it's not 100% Jewish. There are several, quite a few non-Jewish people. There's Don, who just turned 100. He's a Christian minister, and he's one of the boys. I mean, we're all, he's just in with it, and other two. So it's not limited
to
only
mix.
Jewish.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's not limited. And Harry's right.
And he writes for our newspaper as well.
Really?
He's got a lot of things to say.
Well, he turned 100, and just months before he turned 100, he had an art show down that day from work that he had done during the year.
That is
pretty
amazing.
Impressive.
Because we have an 100. Art studio also.
Right.
100? I mean, who can beat that? Now, what is the median age at the community? Do you know?
That's a great question. It's about 79. But of course, we always say in marketing that,
you're only as old as you feel.
Well, but also we think it's important to make the decision to move to Lionsgate sooner rather than later, when you can really enjoy some of the things that Judy and Jerry are talking about, when you're healthy and you can go to these classes and swim in the pool and go to the art studio and create and express yourself.
Now, is there a waiting list, or are you have units available?
That's a great question.
How would someone find out to become a resident?
They should just give us a call. We don't have a waiting list right now. So we have some fantastic apartments. We're offering total renovations to our apartments. So you get new granite countertops, you pick your flooring, you get new appliances, and you pick your paint. So it's like really, truly starting over. And being able to design your own apartment is really exciting for folks. That's probably one of the funnest part of our job. But they can just give us a call.
And how about espresso? Does anybody have espresso there, Don?
I don't know if they do or not. If you have machines that could help them out, though.
There you go.
That's a good thing.
I have to tell you that we're more active here than we were at home.
A lot of people say that.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's so much to choose from. So many activities.
Now, what would you say, how is it that you're able to have friends come in and out? Because a lot of communities, we hear, oh, it's great that we live here, but it's such a pain because it's difficult for visitors to come in and out.
Oh, no.
Not at all.
No.
Our son and two grandchildren visit, and there are two motel rooms, very nice motel rooms on the ground floor. So they stay in one of those, and it's very easy. And
we rent
and
them.
It's very reasonable. Well, so it's wonderful. And for dinners, they just come in with us and have the dinner. And then we argue over the tip.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
Unfortunately, they live quite a distance from here. But
when they come, they stay in the motel rooms.
That's great. Well, Lionsgate Community. It certainly sounds like somewhere I'm going to be checking out, Don.
I just can't wait to get older.
or retire, maybe.
Yeah, but you don't have to happen anytime soon.
But you don't have to retire.
True.
Because you can can stay active, and we'll go get the brisket and hang out every Friday night for dinner and parties. Mm-hmm. But thank you so much, everybody, for telling us about Lionsgate Community. Do you want to share a website?
Well, thank you for having us.
It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. It's www.lionsgateccrc.org. Our phone number is 856-679-2200.
Perfect.
Perfect.
And talking about wonderful dinners, Don, you know what I like to have for dinner sometimes?
Rice?
Fried rice.
Fried rice.
Yes. And we have someone online who has 50 different ways to mix and match this wonderful little grain. And that would be James Beard award-winning food writer Danielle Santoni, the author of new cookbook, Fried Rice, 50 Ways to Stir Up the World's Favorite Grain. How's it going tonight, Danielle?
Good, thanks. How are you guys doing?
We are doing wonderful. Thank you so much. So you came up with an idea for a book. How was it that it came to you? Were you having fried rice one night and you said, you know what? I want to go in the kitchen and try as many different ways as I can to fry up this little grain, and that'd be perfect for a book. How did it come about?
To be honest, the publisher came to me, and I was like, heck yeah, I want to do this book. We eat a lot of fried rice. I have two kids. They're 13 and 16 now, but, you know, we've been making fried rice forever because it's easy, it's cheap, they love it. I could throw any kind of leftovers in there and they'll eat it up. So when they came to me to see if I wanted to do a fried rice book, I completely jumped at the chance. And then it was fun to actually see how different I could make each dish instead of just focusing on Asian recipes. I thought, well, how about Middle Eastern flavors? How about, you know, a classic American flavor. So I got really creative with it, which was pretty fun.
And some of these dishes really surprised me. I mean, you have classic Chinese fried rice with barbecue pork and fried cauliflower rice with turkey kofta, mint and feta from the Middle East. I mean,
even duck.
Yeah. Well, that one is actually, it's like sometimes the names sound complicated, but most of these recipes are really simple and you could whip them up any night of the week. And that cauliflower one, it's made with all like riced cauliflower, which is just, you know, you can buy it in the freezer section or you could just take a head of cauliflower and break it into florets and then blitz it in your food processor. You can, so any of these fried rices, you could use cauliflower instead, or you could do half and half. And if you do half and half, you won't even know the cauliflower is in there. So you're getting extra vegetables and like half the carbs, but not even noticing that you're doing it because it just blends right in. So it's kind of fun. Like a lot of people think, oh, I don't want to eat fried rice because it's, you know, so much carbs, but there's ways to modify it that you get all the comfort and all the flavor, but more nutrition just by using riced cauliflower.
Now, did you take full advantage of this assignment from the publisher and tell the family, like, listen, we have to go out to eat tonight because we have to find many more ways to find out about the fried rice?
Yes. They are luckily very adventurous eaters, so they love to go out. So, yeah, I live in Portland, Oregon, so we went to a bunch of different Thai restaurants and Vietnamese restaurants, and wherever I saw fried rice on the menu, I'd try it. And then sometimes I would just like be eating something with like rice noodles and think, this could be fried rice. Why not? So, so yeah, we definitely went out and did our you know, research, which was really fun. And then I actually just kind of started looking at the world through the lens of fried rice. Like, how can I make this sandwich fried rice? How can I make this bowl of pasta fried rice? And it's kind of crazy how it works. Anywhere there's a starch, you can kind of turn it into fried rice.
Which one really surprised you? Which one blew your mind when you said, wow, this is amazing?
I would have to say the cheeseburger fried rice.
Mm.
That one, I had it in my head, like, this is a possibility. And my husband was like, absolutely not. No, he loves burgers. It's his favorite thing. And he was like, do not mess with my burgers. I don't want fried rice burger. But I thought it would work. And so what I did was I played around with cooking rice in tomato juice. And first I did like pureed tomatoes, different various tomato products. And then finally figured out juice works best to like get that tomato flavor in the rice without coating it in a bunch of solids. And so once you have your tomato rice, I fried it up with a little mustard. And so you're getting the flavor of mustard and ketchup in the rice itself. And then I've got like seasoned ground beef, and you just throw that on top with some crunchy shredded lettuce and tomatoes. So you have like all of the flavors of a burger. And then I put a piece of American cheese on top because you got to have American cheese.
Oh.
but you have all the flavors of a burger, and then you get the crunchy freshness that you get from a burger too, that lettuce and tomato, and you get the silky cheese. It totally works. He could not believe it, and it's his favorite recipe in the whole book. So.
Wow. Now did you pull out, yeah. Did you reach your hand in your pocket and say, let me take out one of these I told you so's?
Yeah. Totally. I rub it in his face quite often. Like, remember that cheeseburger fried rice?
A man should know not to argue with his wife. That was his first mistake.
That's right.
That was his first mistake, obviously. Now, I'm sure
he's
a lot
learning.
I'm sure a lot of people are also surprised, because it was interesting to me many years ago to find out how many different varieties there are of rice. The different strains, mm-hmm. There's so many.
Yeah, it's really intense. Like when you go to the grocery store, you just see a few. You know, there's basmati and jasmine. There might be something just labeled short grain. But there's like, I think in the UK, there's an organization that says there's over 40,000 varieties. And then Harold McGee in his book talks about there's over 100,000 varieties of rice. We're never going to see all those varieties in the store, but it just makes you realize there's so many differences between each strain. So if you go to Japan, you're going to get way more selection than you have in the States. And each one has a different starch makeup. So one might have a little bit more of the amylopectin, which makes it stickier. One might have less and that makes it stand apart better when it's cooked. So there's a lot of variations in size and starch content and color. So, yeah, it's pretty intense. There's so many different kinds out there.
And also one of the things that really, I guess that I enjoyed when I was traveling Asia a lot was seeing rice paddies in action, seeing the workers actually go and cultivate the rice and the way it looks when you see it at a mass level, not just in a picture or on television. Have you ever had the opportunity to go out and see the cultivation?
No, I haven't, not in Asia. And it's funny because I was just invited to go to Lundberg Farms in California and see how they do it. And I was like, yes, I definitely want to go see how they are growing and harvesting the rice. Because yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You have these giant fields, and then there's different harvesting methods too. So it just depends on, you know, how people decide to do it and where it's being grown. So you were in Asia when you saw it grown?
Yes. And it's really mind blowing. And the beauty of it is just amazing. So if you, I would recommend to the publisher and tell them that the perfect follow-up of the book would be to send your whole family on vacation for an extended period of time on their dime and see the cultivation. And,
I love it.
And give you and give you plenty of time to research and write that up.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's perfect.
Exactly. And I'll just take 10% of the book for throwing out the idea, and we'll call it an agent fee. But
yes, you could be my agent.
But it was such a pleasure to have you on the phone. I really enjoyed the book. I encourage everyone to go out and get it for themselves, because everyone sort of looks at fried rice in a singular sort of fashion. And it's like, oh, fried rice, take out the container that's
Chinese
with the little square white box with a metal handle. But you've really elevated it, and the pictures are top notch, and I loved every part of it. It's Fried Rice: 50 Ways to Stir Up the World's Favorite Grain by Danielle Santoni. Do you want to give out any social medias, websites, or anything like that before you go?
My name is easily searched on Twitter and Instagram if anyone wants to follow me there.
Don't you hate that? Don't you? He was like, I saw you on Google. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
But thank you so
I'm
much. Have a great night, and looking forward to
Thank you so much.
To the sequel. Have a good one.
Great. Thanks, you too. Bye.
Now, Don, going from one wonderful book to another, and this next guest has actually been named on multiple lists as the must-purchase book for the fall, and the book is going to be released this Tuesday. It is called A Place at the Table: New American Recipes from the Nation's Top Foreign-Born Chefs. And I couldn't be more happy to have Gabrielle Langholtz. She's the Director of Culinary Projects at the Vilsack Foundation. And it's available for pre-purchase if you can't wait till Tuesday. So we recommend everybody to at least to look at it. But Gabriel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, A Place at the Table. I have to say that the design, the layout, the concept is fantastic. In the political climate that we live in today, it seems as though being an immigrant isn't spotlighted for the wonderfulness of the contributions that they provide to this country on a daily basis. Don, you know you're an immigrant.
Yeah, I came over from Italy in 1967 when I was 5 years old. Didn't know too much, but I think the Italian culture brought a lot of food and fashion and all that to the United States and the other nationalities as well.
Yeah, and the Vilsack Foundation honors immigrants' extraordinary contributions to America, and there are even some Philadelphia chefs spotlighted in the book, Don.
Yes, I heard.
Yeah.
I heard.
Which I always enjoy. So where did the thought process come for the book? Tell us a little bit about how the book came about.
Glad to. So the Vilsack Foundation for more than 15 years has been, as you said, honoring the contributions of immigrants to the American arts and sciences. The founders, Jana and Maritza Vilsack, themselves came here as penniless refugees from former Yugoslavia 50 years ago and found a very welcoming country and a lot of opportunity, and have since given away over $100 million to pay it forward. And specifically, as I say, to honor the contributions of other immigrants, other foreign-born individual Americans, and what people bring to this country. So the Vilsack Foundation presents annual awards in a rotating category, and this year the awards were in the culinary arts. So I consulted with them on the culinary arts, including $250,000 in prizes to four amazing immigrant chefs across the country, and we worked on this book to highlight 40, I think it's actually 41, of the extraordinary people making vast contributions to our kitchens and our country.
Yeah, and there's over 70 recipes from a collection of some of the top chefs that you could imagine. I mean, I'm talking top chefs, Don.
Yeah, I know.
Food celebrities.
Absolutely. We've got several big Michelin star, Dominique Crenn in San Francisco, 3 Michelin stars, Corey Lee, Korean born, 3 Michelin stars. I mean, that's as big as it gets. Daniela Soto Inez, Mexican born, extraordinary award-winning food in New York City and LA. Marcus Samuelson, born in Ethiopia. I mean, each one of these individuals has an extraordinary story. Some of them came with nothing. Some of them grew up with a lot of opportunity. Some of them came as children. Some of them came as adults. I mean, really, people came from around the world, and all of them are really pushing the boundaries, the frontier of what is American cuisine and truly making American food more delicious.
And I really enjoy...
From around the world. Thailand, Nigeria, Argentina, Israel. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I really enjoyed the way that you laid it out of introducing the chef first with a compelling story from them. I mean, it varied. These stories ranged from tackling economic injustices to redefining restaurant cultures that they had struggles Absolutely. With. And you really get a feel for the difficulties that they had to endure in order to become as successful as they have. And just when you really get personal with them, it's hook, line, sinker. Then the chef provides 2, maybe 3 recipes that are really fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my goodness, I love this person. They just gave me one of the most wonderful things I've ever eaten in my life. So it's a job well done. I mean, everyone who worked on this book.
Oh, thank you. I can tell you really spent some time with the book. Yeah, the format of it, it means so much to me that you noticed that, because sometimes you get a cookbook that has a collection of recipes and the chef maybe has their name somewhere on the page or maybe a small photo, but it was really important to us to shine a spotlight on these individuals. So each one of them has, you know, a full spread, 2 pages just about them, a full original photo, their biography, a quote from them about what America and what their immigrant story means to them. Because as you said at the top, it's really a time of xenophobia in this country, and there are terrible stereotypes about what immigrants mean for this country. And we're here to say there's a lot to that story that's not being told, and that we are extraordinarily fortunate as a country to have people bringing their talents here from around the world.
And also, a lot of people lose sight of the vision that it's not only adults that are going through this, it's young children. Because when I presented this to my wife, she works with ESL children and teenagers on a daily basis, English as a second language.
Excellent.
And she shared this book and what it is going to mean to the vast majority of the children and teenagers that she works with to show them that, yeah, life isn't easy right now. It sort of seems as though the world is against you, or at least the political climate now. But there is a path to success, and there are other people who have been in the same situation as you, if not worse, possibly. And to hold your head up and the push forward. So it's really a message that everyone can sort of embrace, like you said, Don.
Yeah, my parents had to go through the same thing, the language barrier, finding a job here in the United States, moving forward, 3 kids they have to feed.
So, and it's scary.
And it's very scary, yeah. You're getting on
It's scary. And it's the American story. And if you look at any kids' menu at Applebee's across the country, like most Americana foods are pizza and lasagna, right? Which are obviously the foods that your people and my mother's people brought here. And, you know, when people think about the foods of immigrants in the United States, we'll often say, oh, you know, Vietnamese food or Guatemalan food. And I'm like, hey, look at the most classic Americana foods, hamburgers, hot dogs, you know, brought here from Hamburg and Frankfurt, even apple pie, which we use to mean something that's extremely quintessentially American. Exactly. Apples are native to Afghanistan, right? I mean, coffee, beer, beef, chicken, pork have all been brought here by immigrants over time.
Exactly.
So these foods now that we're getting to know with kimchi and Thai food and Filipino food and Israeli food, these are just the most recent in generations of delicious dishes coming here from around the world and becoming American over time.
Exactly. And going through the book, I saw so many restaurants that I want to try. And we're going to give you one final question. I'll give you an example. For me personally, I have to keep the Philadelphia love. The two that I enjoyed the most in the book were obviously Serpico and Zahav being spotlighted. But that's because I'm biased and I'll fully admit it. What was the number one restaurant or chef? There you go. Number one.
I can't do it. Oh, my gosh. Number one. Well, I did go back to Zahav last weekend. It was pretty extraordinary. If I had to choose one, oh, my gosh. I think I might say Atla in New York, Daniela Soto Inez. She, as I said, grew up in Mexico. Her parents. Her mom had wanted to be a chef and felt like, no, you have to be a lawyer. And Daniela is something like 28 years old and has already cleaned up like every award. And her food is amazing. It is, you know, truly extraordinary, high-end, blow-your-mind Mexican cuisine.
Well, the next time
I breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Let me know if you ever want to go.
The next time I'm heading up to New York, I'm going to let you go because now that is at the top of my list.
Okay.
But it was such a pleasure to have you join us. A Place at the Table, new American recipes from the nation's top foreign-born chefs. Gabriel, it was such a joy talking to you. Do you want to share any social medias or anything like that? And also, one other note, as we mentioned, the book is being released this Tuesday at all major booksellers.
That's right. Well, the Vilcek Foundation, Vilcek is spelled V-I-L-C-E-K, and they're on all the social media. So thank you so much. I really appreciate how much you've got what this book is about.
No problem at all. Have a great night.
That was pretty good.
Bye-bye.
You too, thanks.
And talking about, she was mentioning a wonderful restaurant in New York City, Don. We have a gentleman online who has a beautiful view of the Manhattan skyline from the waterfront restaurant called Halifax inside of the W Hotel Hoboken, and that would be Chef Satan Schaus. Did I pronounce that correctly?
That is correct.
Man, we were on fire tonight, Don.
Yeah.
So, Chef Satan, how's it going tonight?
Doing well. Doing very well.
So, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and Halifax? What's the reason that we should come to Hoboken and not cross over the bridge to go see the big, glittery lights of the Manhattan skyline, my friend?
Well, there's many reasons. part of it being you don't want to drive in the city, but Halifax is a very unique restaurant. There's not many restaurants that are kind of Nova Scotia inspired within the U.S. And Halifax is one of those. Halifax name is the capital of Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia is where I was born and grew up, and that's kind of the influence of the restaurant. The restaurant is not necessarily Nova Scotian cuisine, but it is definitely influenced that way with the kind of emphasis on seafood and sustainable seafoods.
And you have really elevated the mindset, because most people, I would say the general public, sort of think, oh, a restaurant in the hotel, that's not a dining destination. But you've taken it to a whole nother level, and you are a dining destination in Hoboken, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. We're in the front of the W Hotel, but we're not actually part of the W Hotel. I would kind of share an entrance on the side, but we have our own entrance as well. We're kind of the front of it, so we overlook all of the kind of Manhattan skyline, and we're right on the waterfront in Hoboken. So we're definitely a destination spot. We do get a few hotel guests, but for the most part, it's kind of locals and and people come in there for the restaurant.
Now, what would you say is the most difficult part of running a Nova Scotia? Like you said, it's got a lot of Nova Scotian feel to it, but it's still made American eats with farm fresh ingredients. How do you toe that line gracefully?
Well, we're using the kind of ethos behind kind of Nova Scotian food, which is foods from the earth, from the coast, coastal foods from this area. So at Halifax, I don't serve Nova Scotian cuisine. There are a few items that are kind of ingredients that are Nova Scotian, but for the most part, it's seafood products sustainably raised, wild seafoods, some sustainably raised, that are from the North Atlantic. So the seafood's from the coast of New Jersey, Point Pleasant. We get a lot of our seafood from Point Pleasant, New Jersey, and our meats as well. Our meats kind of come from some fossil farms is one of our purveyors in New Jersey, upstate New York. We have purveyors in upstate New York. Our beef comes from Pennsylvania. So we're sourcing our ingredients not necessarily from eastern Canada, but from the eastern U.S. kind of close to where we are. And so that the difficult part for me is sourcing those. I can't necessarily use every ingredient I want because I want to use as local as possible.
And Don, you know, I mean, we live in an area, as Chef just mentioned, that we're so fortunate to be able to have such a bountiful harvest of wonderful seafood. Yeah,
seafood, fresh fruit, vegetables.
I mean, you go down the shore, the clams, the scallops. It's we're really, really lucky. I know you're a Wildwood sort of person, and they have those clams that they get down there, and it's unbelievable. And Chef, coming from the Nova Scotian background of working with a lot of that from the sea, you have to feel really at home, and that's probably why you're shining so brightly here.
That's true. That's true. The connection I can have in being in New Jersey with the local fishmongers is something I can't necessarily have in some other places. So it is special. It is special, and it does make my job a lot easier having kind of the people behind me that are as excited and care about the food as much as I do.
And we've asked this question multiple times, as you know, Don. One of my questions that I like to ask chefs that are born and raised from other areas, as even though it's easier than ever to get things via Amazon or delivery, there's those certain sort of items or meals that you miss from home. What is the one thing that you miss or crave? And if you go back home, you immediately get to satisfy that hunger.
That's an easy one because, strangely enough, I'm actually in Nova Scotia at this moment. I came back on Friday for the weekend. And the two things that I immediately had to have, one was the maple smoked salmon, which I make a version of it at the restaurant as well. But it's hot smoked salmon bellies kind of cured with maple syrup.
Cool.
That I kind of grew up having. That's one of them. Another is the clam strip roll, like a crispy clam strip roll. It's fried clams, but they're kind of these strips that are just incredible. And I've had both since I've been here. So I've tasted both in the both notes.
Well, Chef, I think you've just described Nova Scotia to have me go out and buy a ticket after this show is done because they both sound amazing. That is...
Yes, they are.
Wow. Well, I want to say it was such a pleasure having you on the show. Halifax out of Hoboken, New Jersey. Hoboken's well known as an Italian hot blood, Don.
I never knew that.
Never knew that?
No.
Oh.
I don't travel as much as you
we
do.
The Nero Festival last week.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Oh, Don.
I missed the bus on that.
And I think you guys even have a cannoli festival up there, correct?
We do, exactly. We make some of the best mozzarella in New Jersey for sure in Hoboken.
Oh man, Don, we're going to have to get you up there, my friend.
We're going to have to travel up there. I'll come and see the chef first, and he could show me around.
That's well, you got to wait
till he gets back.
You have to wait till he comes back from Nova Scotia. But thank you so much for joining us. Would you like to share any social medias, websites, or anything like that before you go?
Certainly. Our website for Halifax is halifaxhoboken.com. Our Instagram handle is @Halifax_Hoboken. So yeah, please look us up on Instagram and on the website and come in and join us.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Hoboken, huh?
Oh, yeah, Don, I mean.
You know, and I've been to the Gennaro Festival, but the one in New York.
Yeah, that's in New York.
Though. Yeah.
That's big in New York.
Yeah.
But Hoboken, I mean, they're tomato pie, cannolis. Oh, it's always been known for a very high concentration of Italians.
How about that?
I'm going to have to take you on tour.
Need to get out a little more often.
Well, then let's talk about it, because we're talking about immigrants and going around in Nova Scotia and everything like that. When you have a hunkering for Italian, as you know, my wife is Italian, mm-hmm. So there's a lot of times when friends want to go out to eat, and they're like, oh, how about Italian? I'm like, I can have plenty of Italian at home. Yeah, she makes it wonderful. But I know you're the same way. You can things, and you go from A to Z when it comes to being a full-fledged Italian. Where is it that when you want that feeling and that food exactly, where do you go?
I go to this restaurant in Voorhees. It's called Radicchio Restaurant. And Luigi is the owner, chef, and you cannot get more authentic Italian food than that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Service top-notch?
Yeah, top-notch. I get this chef's table, and you get little portions of all different delicacies. It's either Italian-inspired or directly Italian food, and I leave 50 pounds heavier.
That's when you know you've been to a good Italian restaurant or household.
And I always end up with a nice bronzino at the end.
Oh, I love a good bronzino.
Yeah, he marinates it in oil.
Does he bring the whole fish?
Flays it in front of your table.
Oh, that's the way to do it.
Best way to have it.
I'm a little leery of places that bring out just the bronzino filet.
Yeah, yeah.
I say, come on. Let's go.
Yeah, we want to see the show.
Yeah, bring the whole fish out. Let's go.
Now, I've never, ever had a bad meal there.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, and nothing really. A good meal is truly a wonderful night out. Because a lot of people are just like, I don't feel like going out. But it's like, this is just me personally. When I go and have a good dinner somewhere, to me, that's enough. I don't need to go dancing, none of that other stuff. And just like dinner, a little conversation, everybody leaves happy, go home, Netflix and chill.
Yeah, and it's BYOB, so you can bring any type of wine you like.
Thanks.
Yeah.
What's your favorite wine? You make your own wine.
It's kind of difficult. I usually bring a bottle to my homemade, not too much more than that, because then I wouldn't be leaving the restaurant. I would Ubering all over the place. But, I enjoy a nice red dark wine, full body.
Okay.
Cab is nice.
Living it up.
That's why my parents came to this country, so we could have such a good life.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, but I had fun tonight, buddy.
So did I.
And we had wonderful cake. Taylor didn't try any of the cake yet, though. I was surprised. Usually, he usually comes in here full attack mode when the...
He's probably just waiting to see how much was going to be left over to get eyed up.
But why don't we end the show up? Everyone's probably sick and tired of hearing us talk.
Sorry. Yeah,
I surprised you.
Marino, DNL, Coffee Bean, the Barista Service. You can see me on Facebook. And anything in the coffee industry that you need, we could answer for you.
Perfect. And we also had our buddy John Howard Fusco call in. James Beard Award winner Danielle Santoni, the author of Fried Rice, 50 Ways to Stir Up the World's Favorite Grain. Gabriel Langholtz, the director of culinary projects at the Vilsack Foundation, with the new book, a place at the table, new American recipes from the nation's top foreign-born chefs, which is available on Tuesday, and Chef Sadin at Halifax Restaurant at the W Hotel in Hoboken. And I'm Derek Tim of BlueJeanFood.com. This is Small Bites. We are live on WildFireRadio.com, Sundays at 6:35 p.m. You can also catch us on all of your Apple products on iTunes the following day. We're also syndicated. Google it, because there's too many to mention, and I'm just lazy. We also end the show, like we always do, with the legendary joke teller with his joke of the week, Jackie the Joke Man Martlin.
Hi, I'm Jackie Martling for Small Bites. A lawyer's riding in his limo when he sees two men eating grass on the side of the road. He tells the driver to stop. He yells out, "Hey, why are you guys eating grass?" The first guy says, "We don't have any money for food." The lawyer says, "Yeah, both of you, get in the car and come with me." The first guy says, "But, sir, I have a wife and two children." And the second guy says, "I have a wife and six children." The lawyer says, "Get in, we'll pick them all up." They get in the car, and after he gives the driver his directions to his house, the first guy says to the lawyer, "You're too kind. Thank you so much." The lawyer says, "No problem. Hey, the grass at my house is almost 2 feet tall."